You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast, sponsored by Equestrian Plus. This month, we get the great pleasure of having our second interview with Kathy Connolly. And again, because we are all very, very busy horsewomen, it's going to be me and Kathy. I keep hoping Aviva's going to be able to make this.
I think that you guys have something against me. I think Kathy knows something, and she keeps saying, just don't let Aviva talk. I don't want her.
Well, and I was even thinking, I was like, well, what if I just had Aviva interview her? And I was like, somebody's got to press the button, and Aviva can't press the button.
So yes, Aviva doesn't know how to press the button. I know. Well, I'm looking forward to listening.
Yeah. Yes, you can listen with the rest. I'm looking forward to, again, I'm glad that I got to pin her down. So that was good. But we hope you enjoyed hearing the follow-up interview with Kathy. We went back and listened to our original interview with her. We had some questions that we didn't get to. And listening back to it, it actually gave me some other questions to ask her. So we'd love to hear any feedback everybody gives us on the interview and any questions you may have. In addition to that, we are always looking for judging questions you may have for Aviva for our Ask the L segment. You're more than welcome to email those to either of us at the addresses provided in the transcript. And if you like what we are doing, make sure to hit the subscribe button and share with your friends. So, Aviva,
yes,
what's going on in your world?
Well, I'm busy, which is really good.
That is good.
And, you know, Tiger, as always, is an absolute unicorn. I just love him so much. You know, everything is kind of status quo, which is not a bad thing at all. But I want to hear about, you had talked to me about your freestyle with Dante, and you have never sent it to me. I'm still waiting, Steph.
I know.
But
I
in the meantime, have you?
I'll send it.
I want to see it. I want to see it. I do. But in the meantime, have you written it at all in a show, and what kind of feedback are you getting?
So I finally got it written. We talked about it a little bit last month that the show that I was planning to go to got canceled. And so right. I went the last weekend, was the last weekend to qualify. So we put it right up against the wall. Woo!
Yay.
And I had a trailer door situation on Sunday. I did get my qualifying score on Saturday and then couldn't keep my trailer door in my trailer Sunday. So I had to recruit help to make it to the show. So it was like, God was like, do you really want to go to this show? And I'm like, God, I really want to go to this show. So we did get both of our qualifying scores. There were mistakes in both tests.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll send you the video of the first day because there were less mistakes, but you see me grinning like a fool because I'm just so happy to be riding my horse to our music. So
yes.
It was good.
They're hard to ride, aren't they? In a lot of ways. I mean, even though you know your music and you did your own choreography, still you're doing a dance and you have to hit marks and
yes.
think in ways that are very different than riding a test.
Yeah. I was very much riding the music the first mm-hmm. day, because then I also had to, the show organizer wanted me to halt and say, turn my music on from the halt, which I was not prepared to do. He said he's trying to get a rule passed about that. Which I was like, well, I hope that rule does not pass, sir. And then he explained to me why, because if you're moving, you're not supposed to be riding with one hand. That's a rule. And if you have to take your hand off your reins to signal, you're riding with one hand. And I was like, you know what?
You're not in the ring.
Well, so I was in the ring. So that is a good point because we started from the inside of the ring, but you're right. It still was before my actual entry.
Right.
So it changed things. So I wasn't real. I was like, okay, I've been practicing cantering up, raising my hand and cantering on. I had to go from a halt and pick up my walk and then my canter, you know, so I was definitely chasing my music the first day.
Okay.
The second day I was able to ride my horse more.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
While I don't think it should be a rule that you have to halt, you are better off halting. And the reason that I say that, start your music from the halt, because there are frequently technical difficulties.
That was the other thing you said. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if you're cantering along and, you know, you're saying, okay, I'm going to raise my hand at E and I'm going to come all the way down the long side. I'm going to enter at A for my planned, you know, halt at I, you may be finding that you're cruising down center line and turning before your music stops because it hasn't started in time.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so yes, that from, then going from the halt definitely gives you that time. I just wasn't prepared for it. So, you know, I have built some places into my music that I have time.
Where you can catch up.
Yes.
Yeah. What did the judges think about your music and your choreography? Obviously you qualified. So
I qualified.
It was good.
Even with mistakes in the, yes. They liked the presentation. I got good scores on my artistic stuff. One person really liked my trot music. The other judge, actually, the one judge liked my canter music. The other judge liked my trot music and said that my canter music was in the background. And I didn't quite understand what that meant.
You know, I don't judge a lot of upper level freestyles, and I don't judge a lot of freestyles, but my first life, I was a musician. Mm-hmm. And when I think about freestyles, I think about freestyles as being a dance.
Sure.
And so for me, it's sort of like watching ice dancing as opposed to ice skating. You know, the music sort of swells. And as the music swells, you know that the person is going to come across the diagonal and do a medium or an extension. Mm-hmm. Or the music starts to get a little bit lighter and crisper. And you think, ooh, now we're going to do a little bit of Piaf, you know, or something changes in the phrasing. Or there's a moment of silence and wow, that's the flying change. Mm-hmm. So if what I, you know, and again, if you're judging a training level freestyle, they're really fun, but there isn't a lot in the music that changes that informs the dance. But sure. At fourth level, there really is. So it may be that your music is really appropriate and it's really well choreographed, but you need to do something like make the music a little bit louder. That, you know, clearly the music is saying, do your extension, but the music is something possibly familiar and people are just humming along with it. And at that moment, you need to raise the volume so that it really says, hey, judge, look,
okay,
I'm dancing. Okay. I'm going big now. You know, so there are little cheats like that you can do. If your horse gets a little bit quick, doing like the medium trot across the diagonal, when you start that phrase in the music, you can adjust the tempo of your music tiny bit so that it follows a little bit better.
Okay.
So there are little technical things that you can do. But for me, what really makes a fabulous freestyle is I feel like the horse and the rider are dancing, that the music is creating the dance, as opposed to the music is in the background and I'm tapping my foot, but I don't feel like I know what's going to happen next.
I gotcha.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I think I can see you saying that. I can see where there's some places I could probably match the music better. And then there's some other places where I specifically said, okay, this is setting me up for my extension, and maybe turning the volume up there will be helpful. So,
yeah. The other thing to remember is that, you know, not everybody likes the same music.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I have judged freestyles that I really don't like the music. You know, I just don't. But it's not about my choice. It's does the music suit the horse?
Suit the horse, yeah.
One of my first experiences with freestyles 100 years ago, one of our local dressage people had this big warm blood chestnut mare. And this is back when everybody did freestyles to classical music. Mm-hmm. And he did his classical music to steel drum music. Mm-hmm. And it was so alien. And I wanted to hate it, but it was so good. And it suited his horse so well that it really opened my eyes. And then I had a trainer who had an old style Hanoverian stallion. Mm-hmm. And she did a freestyle to, you know, the Nutcracker Suite and the Sugar Plum Fairy. And it was perfect for him because he was heavy. And the music made him light.
Aww.
Not like the hippos, you know, in Fantasia. But, you know, it made him look as if he was touching the ground lighter and that he was
cool.
More suspended and softer. So you have to be able to, you know, suspend a little bit your own musical tastes
right.
To enjoy freestyles. You know, look at what happened with Stephen Peters.
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. That was amazing, you know, how that went out across the nation, the Crip walking
yep.
horse.
Yep. And you know, that's actually, my understanding is that's why they included the freestyles in the Olympics, was to make dressage more interesting to the masses. Because we can all recognize a dancing horse.
Yes. Yes, we can
and
all appreciate
you know,
that. No matter,
yeah.
even if it's technically not the best, it still draws
the showmanship.
In. Yes.
Yeah.
It draws
the showmanship.
In. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so we did get our scores. So we are now qualified for third level, fourth level, and fourth level freestyle. So we've got a month.
Fabulous.
I started traveling. I took a red eye in last night from California, where I went to watch one of my natural horsemanship mentors, Harry Whitney. I went and watched him
Fabulous.
For 2 days. So that was awesome. So yeah, it's September in Florida. We're going, is it cooling off or are we getting ready for a hurricane? We don't know. So, you know, we're all like keeping our fingers crossed, but keeping our garbage cans for water.
Yeah.
At the ready. So
Ugh.
Yeah, it's that month. It's
well, good luck.
we have our Ask the L question this month. This is a good one. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about this, because I have a feeling this is a question with a lot of layers. Cass wants to know how a horse behind the vertical should score.
Cass, I hate you. This is such a hard question.
You say that every time and then you knock
no,
it
no,
out
no.
Of the park.
I say this is a good question. The long answer is no, this is a hard question. Because if you read USDF rules, mm-hmm. behind the vertical is a no-no. And we all know behind the vertical is a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
And there are levels of behind the vertical. There's behind the vertical and there's roll cur. And I know that Cass is not asking about roll cur. So judging is really hard, and judges need to learn how to see more than an outline. And you know, I know that I will be riding and I'll say something to my husband and I'll say, does he look heavy? And my husband says, I don't know how to see that.
Mm.
You and I as instructors, I think, can see heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So some horses are built naturally behind the vertical. You know, horses with a big crusty neck, a lot of stallions have that big crusty neck, Mustangs,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the PREs, they are built so that the highest point of their neck is not the pole, but the second or third vertebra.
Okay.
And they may be quote, behind the vertical when they are performing, but they are actually in neutral spinal alignment.
For them.
For them. Mm. And what you may be seeing is not necessarily, honestly, quote, behind the vertical, but the muscling, the flab, if you will, the you know, whatever that's at the crest that changes the angle of the neck.
Okay.
So you have to be able to know a little bit the breed that you're looking at and the conformation of the horse. Some horses go behind the vertical as an evasion. They are ducking to get out of contact.
Okay.
Generally, when you see that, you see a bounce in the bridle, in the connect. And then you can say behind the vertical, or you can say inconsistent in connection, ducks behind vertical. And that's a bad thing.
Okay.
Right?
So like there's a bounce in the rein. There's a looseness to the rein. Okay.
Yeah. You know, because at every level, the horse should be freely seeking the connection, not being pulled into the connection. My wonderful friend, Jen, who does my long lining, talks a lot about how the horses are supposed to step into the bridle with their hind feet. And when I teach, I talk about let the horse find you. Don't go looking for the horse. Mm-hmm. If your horse isn't connected, push him into it with your leg. Don't pull back to find him. So another kind of behind the vertical is you see people who are looking for that contact and they pull. And you can see the bit coming backwards in the mouth. Mm-hmm. They tend to look sort of top heavy, like they could roll over on their heads. Also known as on the forehand.
Okay. Oh, gotcha. Yep, yep, yep.
Except that we don't talk about on the forehand at, you know, intro level or training level because, you know, we're looking at a level balance. Mm-hmm. It's not really on the forehand. You start thinking about on the forehand when you start thinking about collection. So the unfortunate thing is that most people try to judge an outline. You know, if you look at a lot of logos for dressage and you see a horse and it's, you know, generally they're either in an extended trot or they're in a piaffe. If you look, almost invariably the nose is a little bit behind the vertical.
Even that in has the become, diagrams.
Yeah, it's kind of been what we look for. Mm-hmm. So when we look at horses going around the ring and we see that little bit behind the vertical, it doesn't bother us. If you look at the old masters, almost every one of their horses is slightly in front of the vertical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I look for is balance appropriate for the level. What I look for is a horse that seems to be looking for contact rather than a rider looking for contact. And I watch, you know, I would be willing to bet that if you took any rider in the entire world and you ran a video and you freeze framed, you would find moments of behind the vertical. Anybody. I would believe that you would find horses, any horse, above the bit. You know, horses are dynamic.
Right. And their horses balance is perfect. Constantly changing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and horses are, you know, the movement phases change. You know, the moment of the liftoff into canter is not the same balance as the last stride of the canter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a wave, it rolls. And if all you get is if you're on left lead canter and you catch the moment on the left four, guess what? They look like they're on the forehand, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, and if you look at the first moment of the left lead canter, that right hind coming up underneath, they may look above the bit because they're lifting up their whole bodies. Mm. So you have to watch it in context. And I do judge a lot. And I do see horses that vary in their balance and do see horses that balance in their connection. And I usually say low in the pole or behind the vertical for a horse that seems to be pulling himself along rather than pushing himself along.
Okay.
You know, if you think about racehorses, they gallop by pulling with their front feet.
Mm-hmm.
Dressage horses canter by lifting with the outside hind leg.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the same, but it's not. So if I see a horse, like I judged a horse the other day, and the horse spent the entire test in a very lovely round frame. However, the pole lower than the shoulders and the nose was curling back into the chest. And the horse looked as if at any moment he could do a somersault.
Mm.
So that horse, I said, low and pole behind vertical, low and pole behind vertical. Mm-hmm. Now, my job as a judge is not to tell you why the horse is there. So I'm not going to say the rider was pulling. I'm not going to say the horse wasn't strong enough in the level. I'm not going to make that judgment. Mm-hmm. I'm simply a mirror at this point. That horse was very clearly behind the vertical, very clearly on the forehand, very clearly low in the pole. And I addressed that in every single box.
Mm-hmm.
And I took away a half a point to a full point in every single box because it was a big mistake.
Right. It was an overall mistake. Like they may have been going there thinking they were doing things right, and they in fact were on the wrong track, and you wanted to make sure they understood that throughout.
Exactly. Yeah. There are moments in other tests where I say, you know, becomes low in pole.
Mm-hmm.
There are moments in tests when I say above bit,
mm-hmm.
or hollow. And those are moments. Those aren't a consistency of going. So the really long answer, is if I see a horse that is consistently behind the vertical, yes, I do mark it down because it is wrong.
Okay.
And it indicates incorrect training, but I recognize that not all moments of behind the vertical or low in the pole are indicative of incorrect training. They can be momentary moments of imbalance. They can be moments of distraction. They can be moments of weakness, and lots of other things. So,
okay.
That's a hard question.
Well, yeah, because you're, I think as a judge, you are literally having to make a judgment call. Is this a training thought that they are pursuing? Like perhaps the one that you saw this recently, it looked like they were doing that on purpose. So maybe they had the wrong concept.
Understanding. Yeah.
Or I know sometimes in asking a young horse to come to a, you know, asking them to organize their body more, they might be like really trying to lift through their top line and their nose comes behind the vertical because they don't have enough strength to keep their big old noggin out and come through their back. So, but that's a moment. That's not a whole test's worth. So yeah, that's really interesting to have to decipher which one of those areas you're looking at.
So I came across something that I had read a couple years ago about judging, and I just want to read it here because mm-hmm. I think it's really appropriate. Mm-hmm. It says, judges are being asked to do the impossible. They have to make lightning fast decisions time and again for every individual movement performed while having to take into account a vast number of performance indicators ranging from a horse's natural athletic ability, the standard of training across all aspects of the training scale, levels of accuracy in the arena, as well as the quality of the horse-rider relationship as evidenced through levels of obedience, all while ensuring that the welfare of the horse is guaranteed throughout. I just thought that was such an incredibly profound, you know, people think that judging is easy and you know, I hear people say, oh, the judge just doesn't like me, or the judge has a breed bias, or she's just not nice, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But wow, it's hard. And I challenge anybody to, you know, sit at sea and try to see every single movement in the context of the test, and come up with a comment. And I try to make two comments for every box, something that I feel that they do well, and then what we call the fatal flaw. Mm. If you did this better, steady tempo, but bouncing in connection.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. I love that your horse is going freely forward, but guess what? There's something else going on. Nicely uphill, but counter bent. You know, mm-hmm. what is it that's keeping you from a 7.5 or an 8? Mm-hmm. I dare, and you know, I challenge anybody to sit at sea and do a little bit of judging and see how very hard it is. So yeah, you know, we are judging. I mean,
sure.
I'm passing judgments all the time. And you are paying me to pass a judgment on you.
You for know? That.
I know. I mean, I just think that's amazing that we do that. You know, it's just so funny. But we are trying. I mean, I think judges all have good hearts and all are trying to do a good job. Mm-hmm. And I think that we all are trying to recognize the moment in time versus the consistency. And sometimes the consistency is wrong. And we need to note that. And other times the consistency is right with moments in time of loss. And I think we need to honor that as well. So behind the vertical is bad.
Yeah.
Well, and then but it happens to the best of us.
And then I'm thinking now you add in music, you know, like the freestyles, and you just have added a whole nother level of difficulty to that judge's job at that moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having to pay attention to all those different things.
Yeah. I come home from a day of judging and I am exhausted. And it's not from, you know, sitting in an uncomfortable chair and the cold and the wind and the bugs and the rain and all the rest of it. It's from using my brain.
Your brain is burnt out.
You know, I mean, when you're teaching, if you miss something, you can have somebody do it again.
Yes.
You can blink. When you're judging, you know, when the car backfires in the parking lot, you can't turn around to see what's happening. You can acknowledge that the horse spooked at something, but the test doesn't stop.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to keep going.
You have to stay concentrating the entire time and make sense of what you're seeing. And try to say nice things, not just mean things.
Try to be encouraging. Because
we do want people to keep doing this. It's a wonderful sport. And we want people to keep coming back and riding. And we want the horses to be happy in the work. And we want the riders to be happy in the work as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Yep. Thanks, Cass.
Well, thank you, Aviva, for that enlightenment there. We are going to have a word from our sponsor, and then we're going to roll on to our interview with Kathy, or my interview with Kathy.
I know. Tell her I said hi, and I'm sorry.
I will. From short training tips to how-to videos and insider access to private clinics and lessons, learn from top dressage experts with Equestrian Plus. Watch exclusive interviews and lectures, slow-motion demonstrations, and step-by-step tutorials taught by top-level pros, and explore cross-discipline topics such as groundwork, rider fitness, and stable management. Visit equestrianplus.com to sign up for a 7-day free trial with subscription. We are here and we are very happy to be joined this evening by Kathy Connolly. I also am very excited because Aviva got to sit in on the interview with me. That was not an original plan, but we make plans and God laughs. So here we are.
Well, sometimes when technology isn't cooperating, it actually works better.
It does. So Kathy, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here with both of you. And I hadn't met Aviva until tonight. So this is very special.
Aviva and Toby. So we have Toby. We have her silent partner.
Little Toby.
Yes.
So Kathy, in we had so much good feedback from the original interview, and I felt like there was so much that we did not get to talk about that we wanted to do this again. And you've been a little bit of a globetrotter since then. But both Aviva and I went back and listened to the original podcast to kind of figure out where we wanted to pick up. And Aviva, you were sharing some of your thoughts with me before when you listened back to it.
Yeah, I was driving on Sunday out to go teach, and I was listening to the interview that I unfortunately didn't get to sit in on the first time. And the whole thing was wonderful, and it was very exciting getting to know you a little bit, Kathy. But the most wonderful part of the whole interview, I actually pulled over to the side of the highway so that I could write down one of your quotes because it resonated so strongly for me. And what you said was, the best shortcut is the long way.
Uh-huh.
And I just, that just touched me in ways that I can't begin to even start to talk about, because I see so many people trying to take shortcuts and so many people trying to get places before they're ready without doing all of the basics. And of course, the basics are the long way. So that was just, I just really appreciated that. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm touched by that. Thank you.
I liked when you were talking about having confidence in yourself and how young you were when you were having these very deep thoughts.
Yep.
That you have to believe in yourself and have confidence in yourself, and they're not the same thing. When I listened back, I was like, yeah, I got to remember that. So that was my big takeaway. So yeah, we like
that. Actually, that was also one of mine. I said to one of my students later, I said, I believe in you and I believe in your horse. Cause you had talked, Kathy, about telling your eventing students that you believed in them and you believed in their horses and that you believed that they could do it. And that the one student who won didn't want to be the one who came back not believing in herself. I said that to somebody, and her whole face just lit up. Because that's something that I think we believe about our students, but we sometimes forget to tell them that. And that was just such a wonderful thing to tell people.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. You know it. I think that what's so beautiful about helping people and being with their horses, et cetera, is that they already believe in them. And so the next thing is to believe in yourself, because that's who they're partnering with. And that's what makes the we. When there is that confluence together of the same feeling, and they have very sensitive vibes to things. They have very sensitive vibes about us right away when we get on them. And it's very moving for us to know that that feeling is there.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I taught at a new clinic venue this weekend, but I got to see one of the people I had worked with before, and she had inherited a really lovely Lusitano because he was kind of burnt out. You know, somebody kind of fried him. We did a bunch of biomechanics the last time, but I told her I'd sit on him this time. Mm-hmm. And he was much calmer with her when I saw her with him.
Mm-hmm.
But when she went to hand him to me, he immediately started going and got nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, be prepared to be underwhelmed with this ride, because I'm not here to impress you. I'm here to make your horse feel better. And I didn't pee off him. I didn't get to do any tricks. But when I got off, his mouth was quiet. I mean, before I got off, his mouth was quiet and he felt better. And, that meant more to me. Like he had a good experience. Like, okay, I can believe in more than one person in this universe. So
now it's a beautiful example because that is exactly what the vibe is that has to be shared, because there are many elements to them. And feel, when we talk about feel for the horse, they feel us as soon as we get on. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to recognize first and most, because that is the introduction to whatever's going to happen next. And once they give you that, they give you everything. We know that.
Yeah. All right. Let's get some questions in. People know you. I know, like we weren't already, because we could go down this rabbit hole all evening, the three of us. People know you as a trainer. They know you as a coach. They know you as a judge. You are an S judge. And they know you from the commentary that you do at Festival of Champions. You've done commentary at other big events. Which other big events have you done that?
I did dressage at Devon for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And then in 2010, I was invited to do the World Championships in Lexington. And they called me and they asked me, and I said, yes, I would love to do it. And then after I hung up, I thought, why did I say I would do this? This is the World Championship. And I thought, but already I've told you what my philosophy is. If it makes you afraid, do it. Just get hold of yourself and go on with it. And I worked at trying to figure out, I've never been trained in commentary, but it's easy because we just watch what the horses are doing. And then we make comments, and then we understand dressage. So we do that too. Mm-hmm. But so that, and then
what else
after that?
What do you do besides that, besides these things? Do you have other hats that we are not aware of?
I'm also involved with our selections committee, and I've been chair of it for 8 years. Mm. And then also I'm a member of it also now. And what we do with that is there's a group of us, and what we do is we review what the riders have been doing in their horses, because they're vying all for the first four spots or whatever mm-hmm. it would be. And we don't actually choose them. They choose themselves by how well they did, because we don't try to individually change anything that comes out other than what the order of go is. But there are a lot of other things one has to think about during that. And that is what the behind the background is of the horse and the rider and all that sort of thing. I also have traveled with our team to Europe a number of times, because one of the selectors goes when we have world championships, Olympics, whatever it is. And so I've been very privileged to be able to do that. And that is amazingly gratifying. And I've done this for 10, 12 years now. But to see these iconic people riding their astounding horses, and I see them in the stable, I see them in the warm-ups, obviously see them in the actual competition. But it's very mind-opening and eye-opening to see the various techniques they use to prepare themselves to go into what they have as 6 minutes to show the very best things that their horses can do, show the partnership they have, and to know just when you can go for a 10 or an 8 or a 9. And sometimes you just have to go for a 7 for that. For example, in one person I was coaching, I've coached internationally a number of times. I was coaching some in the Pan American Games. And I said, you know, we know the extended trot is only a 7. So don't go for any higher than that. Go for that, because you can get 9s in your canter pirouettes, and they're double coefficients, and the extended trot isn't. Mm. And that person is very famous. I'm not going to say names, but very famous. And went ahead and did that. And she ended up silver medal, where she had gone into that last competition, that last part of the competition, in the bronze medal placing. Wow. So it's exciting to see. And when people have worked this hard in their life to become what they are, their discipline, and all of the factors that go into the basket of being that good is quite remarkable. And I know myself because I've competed internationally for a team also. So, you know, the feelings of what that is, and it's always an honor. And it's a matter of a lot of things that you do. Think twice, ride once, instead of just being impulsive. Always take the feeling of what your horse is feeling at that time. And then, of course, it's a partnership. So it's a matter. You're the leader for sure, but you're not the master. Horses like leaders. They don't like masters who are telling them what to do. They're like leaders and partners who guide them to do what it is as a duet.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
So all the many, many hats that you have worn and are currently wearing, what would you say is your favorite? Competitor, trainer, judge, coach?
Teaching Stephanie.
Well,
teaching Stephanie.
Teaching Stephanie.
Talking to Aviva.
Yes.
Yeah.
And kissing your dog. Kissing your dog.
Yes, yes.
Well, it's actually, when we think of the different categories that you just mentioned, there's some continuity there. The judges are a different category than the other ones we just mentioned, in the sense that they have a different job. When your teacher, trainer, and the other ones that we mentioned, it's about, I think what it comes down to as a theme, it's about the purity of the heart and also carrying forward what you're asking a horse to do and the way that you do it, the manner in which you do it. And horses are social creatures, and we know that. So it's important always that what we're doing is we're being there for them. And I believe that, so I love especially teaching, training, spending time with the horses and all the other things that we factored in. And what I think the philosophy is that carries people through who not only go to the highest levels, but stay in the highest levels are people who keep this in mind. Infinite patience creates immediate results. Mm-hmm. In other words, when there is going to be a continuity at a moment for horse and rider combination, when something's going awry and the person has the vibe of that, horses don't think about infinite patience, but they do know they are social creatures. They know they're there with us. That's very paramount to them. And the way that they function, the way that they find that what's going on in themselves. And so it's important that we take our time with that, because once these Olympians are really the ones who keep on winning and making teams are people who know exactly what this is. Because the infinite patience, there's no immediate results unless you are the reason that a horse wants to stay in with you. So I'm saying that's what I love about the training and the teaching and all of that, because you're basically very involved with the hearts of two creatures who are different, but different species, but they are in the same place partnering. And that's a sacred thing that is not really easily describable. You know what it is, and I know what it is, and all the people we know that ride know what it is. And you think of back to when there were battles and these horses would go into battles. There's the penultimate of what that was, that they would actually go and do that for someone that was on their back. Mm. So when we think of dressage, I mean, dressage is a sport, but it's an art form. But above all, it's a partnership. And that's, I think, what the people who win always keep in mind. And of course, there are people who are not kind to their horses. And we know that as a country, we're standing up with the other countries to have the welfare of the horse be number one. Mm-hmm. And that will always be the case for us.
Hmm. When you're thinking about the horse and rider partnership, looking at the human, what mm-hmm. makes, in your mind, what makes a good student? What makes you smile when you think about teaching someone? What qualities do you see in that person, in those people?
I think a good student, and there's some combining here with a good horseman, which was a later question, but they're integrated in many ways.
Okay.
But a good student and horseman is someone who's respectful of the horse. And when it's a student, they're respectful of the teacher and the trainer also. And good students and horsemen are people who really want to learn, who listen and also hear what's going on inside of a horse's being, but also when they're training a person, it's getting listening and hearing to what that person says. I think for sure it's someone who has a good heart. And that's a variation in the way it characterizes itself. But we know as trainers and teachers what we feel and see with someone. And always in all those situations, it's a person who authentically puts the horse first. And I think also in terms of being a teacher, trainer, rider, it's someone who can forgive themselves when they make a mistake because, and learn how to move on past that because mm-hmm. when they do that, they're able then to go on to be the next level of what they want to be. And I think also that it making a mistake is fine if you don't make it again in terms of anything that's against a horse. If it's something because you're trying to get your seat better or you tried to half halt better, that's right. different than how you treat the creature you're sitting on. So it's very important that all that is woven in so that the horse doesn't think the mistake was his.
Mm.
And I think also that the other traits are that, I said this before, but I think a good teacher, a good trainer needs to have a purity of heart. And also, what kind of soul does that person have? And this isn't being gushy. This is just truth. And I think that, you know, we're sitting on a creature who's got a big heart and who's going to try to do everything for us. I was just out at in Chicago, you know, and watching all these rides and seeing horses come into this place. And we've seen it thousands of times, all of us. And they come in and they really want to try to do it. And sometimes their try is less than we'd hope for. Their try is always big. There's the success isn't always the same because right. we have things that can happen. But that I think is those are the traits of a good student. And I think the other thing in terms of being a good horseman is that if it doesn't feel like a horse can do something, it's going to be because of one of two things. They are fearful or they don't understand. And when they don't understand, and that's the common one, because once you have a relationship with a horse, they're seldom fearful of you. But what we need to understand in terms of their psyche and their desire to keep trying is that we need to understand that they don't understand. And then we need to be able to be fluent in our abilities to have them feel what it is that with the correct aids, to have them feel what it is that could achieve the result that they have no idea about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I say, yeah, because that's when I said, there has to be a we. Well, we are the leader, but we have to be a clear leader who really is thinking of the horse first. And of course, it's all about good riding, and it's all about really having put your time into have a really good seat and have correct aids and all the things that we spend our lives doing. And that's one of the other things with dressage is the people's commitment to something that will never be perfect, but it still can be beautiful. In other words, when we see a mistake made by a horse or a rider rather, and then it happens together, the most important part of that is just to go on with that and then self-analyze what we can do to be better the next time. And then they have a chance to be too.
Hmm. That's lovely.
That is. Yes. If you could give one piece of wisdom to someone, what do you think? And I guess let's go with competitors, because there's lots of people that ride, and lots of people ride well until they get into a competitive situation. And I don't think anybody goes into a competitive situation hoping. I like to think that people go into a competitive situation because they feel prepared, but they may get there and get a little worried. So what piece of wisdom could you give people if you could only give them one piece of wisdom?
I think that some of the best competitors in the world are people who get really nervous.
Really?
And, and I won't name names, but I
know. Can we have it rhymes with?
But what they've done is they've trained themselves to get into a balance box in their head. And there's a way to do that. I trained myself to do it because it's not difficult to do, but it is a self-training thing. I mean, I've never had a sports psychologist. It wasn't that I didn't need one, but since that wasn't a big thing, I thought I have to learn to do this and instill this piece in myself.
Mm.
And so with the people that I'm laughing because it was so fun with some of the people. So I said, number one, speak slower. I had one who's, again, very well known, but she would, but I said, okay, the first thing we have to do is turn the dial down, just like we do with our horses. So you need to speak slower. You need to speak. Listen to your husband. He speaks slower than you. practice speak. So we do this. And first there was laughing, but it makes a difference because it turns the dial down in us into a calm way of speaking. And every time we're speaking to ourselves, even though we're speaking to others, some others around us. So I think that there are other techniques people have. They'll go out, they'll run before they go in a competition or class or something. But I think it's mainly about adjusting an inner dial. And I think that it's important too that we need to go in with the belief that we can do what we have trained ourselves to do. I think that's very important, not to let what ifs come in. And you can do that. If you don't know how to do it, you can teach yourself how to do it. And always say things in positive terms, not in negative terms. Don't say all the things you're not going to do. Decide you're going to be it when you go in there. When Adrienne Lyle goes in, or we can say a number of other riders, staff on and on, we have so many incredible riders. They don't go in to try to do it. They go in and they are it. And that is a state of mind that they go into. So I say to my riders, be it. Go in there and just be it, because that's what they're doing. And just because they're an Olympian and have medals doesn't mean you can't do it too, because you can. So it's a self-training thing. And there's a technique I have that I help people with that, and of course they have to work on it and do that, but that is very possible. I've seen some people who had severe issues with that. And they're some of the greatest competitors that we've had. So anything is possible, and we know that. And once someone believes that themselves and has a coach or a trainer who helps them believe that, they will get there. That's for sure. Not maybe, they will.
So are you going to tell us your technique?
Well, it's basically a way to direct your emotions to be your cheerleaders instead of to be what would subtract from the way you're thinking once you go into the situation you're going to be in. It's a number of different things. It takes quite a while to explain, even though it comes down to just a couple of bullets. And I think really one of the things is to remember why you're even going in there to the class. And the reason people do it to begin with, I think, is because of what it is when you first saw a horse. You already mm-hmm. were in love with the horse, even though you didn't even know him, right? And Americans love their horses very, very much. And it's a very integral and significant part of our history in terms of, okay, in the Western riding and then any other kinds of riding. What it is it's the connection with the horse. And the connection with the horse comes from your connection with yourself. So when you know that they're depending on you to be that, that's why I talked about the vibe mm-hmm. earlier. That is because they're sensitive the way they are, because when they have someone quiet on them who has that vibe, they go into their own parasympathetic nervous system. And that acupressure mm-hmm. rather point I've shown you before. And there are other ones that I have that I use, but that's a pathway and a way and they respond very quickly to that. That's why I always use that and have with my own horses. And what happens is that it brings everything to a greater height in terms of emotional and also the way that they use their brain when you have that kind of purpose and feel to them. And that's in our blood to do that. It's in our blood to be that because we are horse lovers.
Speaking of loving horses, there are some judges who have breed biases both for certain mm-hmm. kinds of horses and against certain kinds of horses. And sometimes people get a little bit worried about going to compete because they do have an off-breed horse. Mm-hmm. What do you say to riders? How can they best showcase, you know, the wonderful qualities of their horses? And I used to ride a Percheron Hackney Pony Cross, and he was absolutely not your typical dressage mount. And yet he was such a joy to ride. And my thing was every time I went down center line is I wanted the judges to see that this, to quote my trainer, he came out of his stall and worked above his pay grade every single day because he was just so wonderful. So what can we say to riders who are on the quote less than horses to make them want to keep showing up and want to keep taking the challenge of being judged mm-hmm. and competing?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I think in terms of the question, to showcase the horses that have qualities, et cetera. First of all, we know that some horses are bred more for strengths for, let's say, dressage than some others might be. In other words, we have horses that people want to ride in dressage and they do it very well, but it's not necessarily a horse when they started out that was for dressage because it might be another breed that it has a lesser extended ability for extended trot or for Piaf or something like that. So I recommend that they begin at the levels that are levels appropriate to their horse and the goals at that time and make sure to build up incrementally to the next level rather than getting overfaced until the basics are really in there and solidly in there. We know that, I mean, dressage is a sport, but it's also an art form. But what it also is it's the confluence of the relationship you have with them. And it's important to focus on their strengths and be realistic about the things they're not as strong in.
Yeah.
Because it's not really that we want to. I think they have to be realistic if it's a horse that isn't a horse. And hopefully they have good trainers and teachers who helped guide them along with this. Doesn't need to be dealt with in a negative way because I've seen horses who were less gifted who would win because they would get a 7 and 7+ on many things and mm-hmm. then lesser in other areas. So it has to do with the partnership that they have and how realistic they are and what level they show their horses. I don't really want to mention breeds in particular, but some are more powerfully built for the engagement in dressage. And some are less so, but that doesn't mean they can't all do it.
Yep.
I don't know if that's answering the question, but I mean, some horses clearly, whether it's jumpers or dressage, are bred for international levels. And then others, when we see people who are showing in dressage and they bought this horse and love this horse and they go in to ride this horse in the level they're in, that is as exciting and admirable as it is to see a horse who's got incredible international talent, because it's that partnership thing again.
Absolutely.
So, and I think sometimes breeds get criticized too much. And I think what's important, I think the major thing that matters is how their rider feels about their horse. That's what it's about.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think I'm a graduate of the L program and I judge a lot of schooling shows. So I judge a lot of lower level riders, and watching someone come down center line beaming because they love their horse. And that ending final halt, and it's not necessarily after a beautiful ride, and the rider throws her arms around her horse's neck. You know, and just the love, and you want to give a 90.
Yes, exactly.
Just right, because of the love that's there, and the, and, you know, I see some horses who are just, you can just tell they would go through fire for their riders, that the partnership is there. And to me, that's every bit as beautiful as watching the Olympians do a 9.5 extended trot.
Yeah.
You know, because that, isn't that why all of us little girls fell in love with horses in the first place?
Yes. And you just said it beautifully. You capsulized the whole thing very well. People have a reason they go in. They don't always go in to win. In some, in other words, I just came back from the festival a few weeks ago, but what always, I mean, it, sometimes I, my throat is a little tight because I look down and see these beautiful riders and horses coming in, and the joy that what you just said, coming down the center line and they halt and salute, and maybe the horse made mistakes and all that, but they made it there. They got to the festival of champions, and they're riding their horse, and they'd rather ride that horse, another one who could win. And they, it's sometimes beautiful isn't a score. Beautiful is something that is part of the heart, and it's all over the place. It's, of course, dressage is a manifestation of power and grace. And then when we partner, it's two souls who are different species, but they're partnering in a way to a dream come true. And the dream is their dream. It's not just what other people necessarily feel about placings. And we know that they're very noble and generous creatures, and and they're sustained by kindness from the rider and the horse. And that's what the partnership is about. That's what's beautiful about our sport, because not everybody can jump fences, but almost anybody can come into the dressage world and have a very significant place where they belong when they go in to do this. And that's what they're going to remember. And that's what they'll always remember, when someday the pictures they look on the bureau may be the one horse that isn't there anymore, but he still is, because he did that for you.
We all have that horse.
Some of us have more than one of those horses.
Yes, that's right.
We are very, very lucky.
Absolutely.
I think you said something really important, though, Kathy, and that's to remember why people do it. I think that sometimes people get so caught up in the idea of going to win and getting the blue ribbon or the red ribbon or achieving a medal or whatever, that they start to lose sight of the joy of riding and the joy of being with your horse. And, you know, we put so much pressure on ourselves to compete. I mean, we get judged. I mean, how many,
we pay to get judged. People,
pay to get a judge saying, well, you know, that was good, but it wasn't very good, you know, and, you know, it's very rough in that. But, you know, what I say to my students when they come out of the ring is, you know, Did you feel good about that? Are you happy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. 'Cause that's what matters. Don't worry about what your placing was. Don't worry about what your score was. Don't worry about what the judge says. You know what you and your horse did together in that ring that you've not done, maybe not done before,
yeah,
and did better than you ever have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, remembering, I think just remembering the joy sometimes gets lost in showing.
Yeah, it can, but it's what you just said. It's what people go into it with. Mostly, usually the riders are disappointed in themselves. I think it's much.
Yeah.
I think it's seldom that a good rider is ever disappointed in the horse. When the upper levels and the high tiers of all that, T-I-E-R-S, I don't ever hear one come out and say something about the horse. They don't.
He didn't, blah, blah, blah. That's not happening.
No.
Yeah.
No.
No, he didn't. He didn't this. He didn't that. Well, guess who was why it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of blame anywhere, whether it's to the rider or the horse, but it's about going in there and just doing this. And you're right. It's all about the love of the horse. And as I said earlier, Americans, right from the beginning, we love our horses. And that's why we're so attracted to this sport. We're 3,000 miles from the nucleus of dressage in the United States, when you think how far it is to Germany. And where it all didn't begin. But you know, that's the crux right there, Germany, Holland, et cetera. But we've been figuring in very well. And we as Americans, we don't want to be last, but in the earlier times when people were competing, Americans are brave. And that's what also the Europeans think. The Americans are brave and they try hard and they're going to go out there. And if they're last place, they're not going to be last place the next time. And there was a lot of that 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Mm. And what's happened, this didn't just happen now. This has been built over the people, from the people who were doing those things. And then on we go, look at the podium and all of the pathway things that are happening now with the programs that Christine Traurig's very involved with and George Williams also, and so many other people that are on committees and are having jobs, either ones for USEF. When we look at our USEF staff, I love all of them. They're so wonderful. Laura Roberts is the head of it. And then we have Lauren Moore, who has her job. And we have Nicole Butchko, and she's astounding. And we have Sarah Hollander, and she has another piece that she does. And Kristen Brett, who runs the whole schmeal, the whole thing, the Festival of Champions. Mm. And so that's what's beautiful, is the confluence of all of the networks that join together to keep this going and to keep people able to have dreams come true.
Oh, I'm so glad I got to be here tonight.
Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you for being here. You know, one other thing, I think that we are the luckiest creatures on the earth because we have dogs and horses.
And cats. Don't forget the cats.
And gerbils.
Yes.
But you know, when you think, how many people you know that have a horse that don't have a dog? And what it is they're very pure creatures. And horses are too. We know that. It's when they just have a different job. You know, they have hooves, and there's centuries ago, they were pulling wagons and doing all sorts of things. They were workers. Dogs have had jobs, but like herding sheep or something. But the purity of the soul is something that we strive for. And a lot of people have pure souls. It's not a matter of putting down humanity. Humanity is just, it's miraculous, basically. And I think that's why we love this, because we get to do something and we appreciate every moment of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Because not everybody gets to do this.
Yep.
And we're not better. We're just luckier, more lucky.
Yes.
That we got introduced to this as a child or middle age or whenever it is. It's always the best time. There's no time that's too late.
Better late than never.
And that's right. That's right. So I think We're just
very blessed to be able to do this and have these.
Very blessed. Yes. Very, very blessed.
Yes. You mentioned horses having jobs and dogs having jobs, but you didn't, mm-hmm. you avoided the fact that cats have staff.
Yes.
That's right. Cats. Now that's because cats are in charge of dogs and horses.
Everybody, cats am are I making,
and humans.
Am I making humans. Yes for it now? Yes. Cats know their own soul and don't need us.
Yes.
Except that's what they give us the impression of. They actually do need people, but
only when it's convenient.
They show in a different way.
Yes. Oh, if it wasn't dark out and thundering, I feel inspired to go ride my horse.
Is it thundering at your place?
Yeah. It's Florida.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. We need rain. It's okay.
Yeah, we're going to rain for the next week, but right now we're clear.
You could blow some of that my way.
Yeah.
So
it's supposed to rain here too all next week, but
we're all East Coast girls. So
mm-hmm. That's right.
Kathy,
that's
thank right. you. Thank you for joining us
thank
again
you.
And making the time for us and just being an inspiration on so many levels. And making us think about this, taking us back to why we started in the first place.
Yeah, I think, well, thank you for saying those things. Thank you for inviting me, really. I'm honored to be asked. And it really takes us back to the very beginning. You know, everybody who does this remembers what they did when they were 8, 9, 10, 12, mm-hmm. 40, whatever,
40.
Whatever they started.
32. You know,
whenever they started. And because there's an ambiance and also that vibe that we talk about that's there. And once we know about it, we don't feel like we could live without it. And some people say it's an addiction. No, it's not. It's a necessity.
Yeah,
but that's not an addiction. And it's just absolute passionate love for a creature that gives what we get from them. That's for sure.
Yes.
That's why they've taken such a noble place in history.
Yeah. Yes. All right, ladies.
So thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you to our listeners. And we hope you enjoy it. We would love to hear any feedback you would have for us. And we will look forward to seeing you on another Dressage Today podcast.